don't need to do that. And we have a phone call from the Wet Big Easy.
Ooh.
Okay, so we have Scott on the line. Brother Scott.
Yes.
How are you?
I'm very well. How are you doing?
Okay. You know, thank goodness that y'all barely escaped another major catastrophe there in New Orleans with the weather the other day.
Right.
You know.
Scott, tell us who you are.
My name is Scott Crow, and I'm the co-founder of the Common Ground Relief Organization here in New Orleans.
Mm-hmm. All right.
Malik Rahim, myself, and Brandon Darby, and Sharon Johnson co-founded the organization in the wake of what happened after Katrina in 2005.
Mm-hmm. Hey, tell me, Scott, did King Creole make the right decision this time?
I think so. We're actually, you know, it's actually looking pretty good on here. In terms of immediate disaster, it's not that bad. On a scale of 1 to 10, we've got a 6 or a 7, depending on where you live.
Mm-hmm.
Down south really far, like in the Houma Nation, down south below that, right along Port of Shin, right along the coast, the people took the biggest storm surge, and they got the biggest hit.
Mm-hmm.
But up in New Orleans, the biggest disaster that's happened here is the long, slow disaster of neglect,
mm-hmm.
the long, slow disaster of abandonment and indifference.
Right.
Not just by the government, but by companies and by non-governmental organizations.
Mm-hmm.
And every time that something like this happens, when Katrina comes in, or Gustav in this case, it just opens the wounds up again, because this city has not healed yet.
Right.
And so I want people to remember that, again, that storms like Gustav and Katrina and Rita that came before are only immediate disasters. And that the long, slow history of disaster is still here, and people still need help rebuilding their lives, and that's what Common Ground is here doing.
Yeah,
we're helping people.
Go ahead, Mel.
Just saying, we're helping people rebuild their lives, and it's a long, slow process. And even though it's not just about people being stuck on their roofs, they get stuck in their houses, they
mm-hmm.
get stuck in their dead end jobs or no jobs, they get stuck in not being able to move back to their neighborhoods or have transportation to get around. These are all important issues: or access to medical and health care.
Mm-hmm. You know, there are still people around the country that have not been able to come back to the area.
No, totally. There's people who have not come back. Or there's people who came back who have been here less than 2 months, had to evacuate out already,
mm-hmm.
have not even gotten settled. And you know, what does that say about things? What does it say about the levees? I've viewed the levees in the Lower Ninth Ward today where we work. And they already, the brand new levees that we spent millions of dollars on, the U.S. government with taxpayer money spent millions of dollars on, have cracks and holes in them.
Get out.
What is that? That's a disaster. That's a long, slow disaster that we don't have to look at because they didn't blow open today, but they will blow open.
Scott, this is Rick Adams. That was my question because, from what I understand, the storm did not hit New Orleans, thank God, head on. And I guess it was a 2 or 3, somewhere in there. And so I hear these folks on television saying, you know, well, it hailed, this was successful, you know. And I'm thinking, well, no, what if it was a 3 or 4 or if it hit right head on? What are you
right.
telling me? What have you prepared? And they straight up admitted that a percentage of them have not been done at all.
No, the roads have still not been repaired. Yeah, besides the levees, you've got roadways and sewer systems and infrastructure that still has not been repaired. And it's not just New Orleans, it's the whole area.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking about the First Nations people in Cajun and Vietnamese villages along the coast that were totally forgotten and ignored the first times around,
mm-hmm.
and now those people are being ignored again.
Mm.
And that is a disaster unto itself. And I just wanted to stay in the people's minds that this is still, that New Orleans still matters, Louisiana still matters, that the Gulf Coast is always vulnerable,
mm-hmm.
and that what can we all do about it?
Right.
Did the One Charity Hospital close down after Katrina?
Yes, it did. It was the largest. It was the largest hospital that would take people for free, and it's gone. And so, in that wake, Common Ground opened up two permanent health clinics. We operate one in the Lower Ninth, and we operate one in Algiers. But you know, this city needs 10 free health clinics or low income health clinics,
mm-hmm.
15 of them, 25 of them. It takes a lot to run the city. And when you have hospitals closing, clinics can only do so much
mm-hmm.
before the hospitals that do remain become too overburdened.
So what goes on when some of our poor folks go to some of these larger hospitals, Scott?
Well, I can't give you all the details, but I can tell you in general that they're treated with indifference, they're treated with disrespect, and often they're just treated with neglect. You know, I don't mean to come down on a lot of healthcare providers because I know that they're probably doing the best of what they can, but they're short staffed, they're short on funds, and they're short on space. I mean, these are chronic problems here. Mm. And especially if you deal with and if you start even look at wider problems like mental health issues and issues around drug and alcohol, there's just no support systems for it.
Mm.
And that's why crime rates are rising, and so what they want to do instead of trying to solve the problems, they want to increase the police force.
Mm-hmm.
They say New Orleans is a violent city. Well, of course you're violent if you've got nothing to do. If you have no choices, the choice that you have is to do nothing, then that's all you've got.
Mm-hmm.
It is very clear to me that some of the powers that be have made a very conscious decision that New Orleans is going to be smaller, it's going to be more affluent, and it's going to be less people of color. I mean, that is very
Absolutely.
Clear. I look at the public school district. They used this occasion to have an experiment. What, 70% of the schools now are charter schools?
Right.
You just described the health care system. I know about what happened with the public housing, perfectly good housing, boarded up, wouldn't even let people move back in, tearing them down, ethnic cleansing.
Absolutely. It is. And it's the slow, long history of disaster on communities like these.
Mm-hmm. Now,
and, you know, New Orleans is I look at it as a canary in a coal mine because of what happens here. We have a natural disaster that can come into Louisiana every once in a while when we think about it. But this happens to communities across the country.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think we need to draw the connections in that. How does it relate to Pittsburgh? How does it relate to Chicago? How does it relate to Austin, Texas?
I'll be coming to New Orleans with the Institute of the Black World and the State of the Black World Conference in November.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the reasons we're doing that, we're saying in all of our publicity and releases and meetings and organizing activities that all roads lead to New Orleans and that New Orleans is a metaphor for ghettos and barrios across this country and, in fact, throughout the third world, how poor people and people of color are being treated by just runaway capital and racists and imperialists and folks who just don't care about people. And that
Absolutely.
We need to organize, one, to never let New Orleans be on the back burner. And that folks, as you have very eloquently pointed out, we cannot forget that some people walk around thinking everything's done. The roads are fixed, the schools are up, and there's no problem. Yeah, we had a little bit of a storm, but now that it, quote unquote, missed you guys, now I know they probably really think, oh, you know, everything's fine down there.
Oh, yeah, like the other day on the news, they were showing like people on Bourbon Street, oh, yeah, come on in.
Yeah, like you know, there's nothing.
Nothing happened.
But that's because it's not going to flood there.
Mm-hmm.
But in the lower ninth, the people aren't saying that. They're saying, we're scared. We got nothing. Where are my neighbors at?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where's my infrastructure? Where's the help if I need it? Where's the hospital? You know, where are my kids going to go to school at? How am I going to work? That's what they're saying. They're not saying, come on down and party and eat barbecue. We can ride out the storm.
Right.
They're like, if they're staying, they're staying because they have to stay.
We've read a lot about pre-Katrina where people were able to put a little bit of money together, have a little apartment, and be able to live. But now, since Katrina, what we've read about over and over again is people not being able even to rent the places that they used to rent or to own the places they used to own. And so that's has been one of the reasons for the influx of homelessness.
Yeah. Homeless population's high in this city. Crime rate's high in this city. But the social services are low.
Mm-hmm.
Infrastructure's low.
But,
and I'm hoping, you know, and when things like Gustav hit, I think that the media glosses over that because it's not sensational enough.
Yeah, it's a real crisis orientation. In other words, because you know, it wasn't really bad because it wasn't extreme, then it's just going to fall off the front page when it would take decades to rebuild what has happened from the original hurricane.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Vince was telling me that they're trying to take deeds to people's houses now.
Well, the one person was stopped. It was on the news. He was stopped and trying to get back into New Orleans, and they asked him for his deed to his house, which I'm sure he always carries with him.
Yeah.
I happen to have it right here, and that he was told to he was turned back.
And what happens if you're a renter? You just don't get to go back, huh? Right. I mean, that's like crazy. They actually ask someone on the street, not a pre-appointment, bring your, you know, your legal documents, if it's possible to even get your hands on, but just someone coming, do you have your deed on you?
It's like East Berlin.
But that also shows the arbitrary nature of the state. And when I call about the state, I don't mean the state of Louisiana. I mean the state in any form, whether it's city, county, or federal officials, as well as non-governmental organizations. They're reactionary movements to these things. They look at these things in reactionary and arbitrary ways, and they treat people with, as I said earlier, indifference, indignity, and disrespect in many ways. Again, it's not everybody within those systems, but those systems in general do that.
Yeah, you can't get in today, but there's sure people going to be able to get into the Superdome for the game on Sunday.
Oh, absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. You know, the most chilling thing of all, in a strange kind of way, because obviously the deaths and the folks stranded and all of that was the most horrific. But I have this image in my mind's eye of the Blackwater paramilitary folks. And I never got an explanation, like, who invited them? Why were they? I mean, they were there, like, before the storm hit. And martial law was declared. And what you said earlier about all of us should be very afraid, because what happens there, we're next. It could happen anywhere.
Absolutely.
And the erosion, the denial of people's just basic civil and human rights is frightening.
Absolutely. Right. And power doesn't care. And, you know, they don't care. They don't care nearly as much as as the people do. But that's why we need organizations like Common Ground Relief and communities like this. That's why we need organizations in Pittsburgh. That's why we need organizations in Austin, Texas, and from coast to coast. This is why we need all of these things. And because we have to rely on ourselves, because we are the ones that we're all waiting for to do all this work.
And
it's important for us to remember that. We don't have to give our power away. We don't have to give anything away.
Mm-hmm.
We can do these things. When Common Ground Relief started, we didn't need the state. We said we will not work with the Red Cross. We said we will not work with the state because they wanted to kill us. They're not Red Cross, but the state wanted to kill us. So we decided that we would just do what we needed to do, whether they said we were wrong or not. And you know what they told us? They said, you're part of the problem. I said, serving food to people is part of the problem. Getting hygiene kits to people is part of the problem. Opening medical clinics when the Red Cross is not around is part of the problem. Then I want to be the problem. Because what we showed, I think that we showed then and that we still show today, is that that people see the fundamental disconnect between large governmental organizations and the government and what's the reality on the ground.
Mm-hmm.
And sure, they evacuated a lot of people out, but what they do, they just sent them places. I've got an 85-year-old man sitting in my living room in Austin, Texas.
Mm.
And he doesn't know when he's going back
because
they didn't tell him anything.
That's really important, because the Katrina showed us that the government will not take care of us, and that we have to learn how to take care of ourselves.
And absolutely, we can take care of ourselves.
Yep.
Yeah. I mean, even to the point it became a question of debate about whether the government should be even concerned about having a mechanism to keep track of people, their family, and their children as they were scattered to the four winds, which I thought was like just remarkable. I mean, if it wasn't just basic human caring and dignity and empathy, government is supposed to serve the people. So how would you not be concerned when so many of your citizens are scattered under emergency conditions that it was almost like it never occurred to them to even be concerned? Well, I'm in Houston. My kids might be in Georgia, and my father might be in. They act like that was no. Well, y'all get together however you can get together. You know,
as the
incredible
state in all its form, and the government, can they do that?
All right. Well, we were talking to Scott. You know, he's with Common Ground. And Vincent, you got information on how we can reach them and how people can help?
I hate to be so modern, but you could go to commongroundrelief.org or Google that if you have a hard time with that.
Mm-hmm.
Commongroundrelief.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot that could be done. One of the things they're doing right now is they've moved into a phase of building, from getting out houses to building houses, and they desperately need skilled people. So call down there and tell them when you could come.
Hey, Scott?
Back.
Scott, you're back.
Good.
I'm sorry about that. We were just trying to tell people how folks can help out around the country and around the world if they want to, like, help out the folks with Common Ground.
Well, I think first and foremost, ask what you can do in your own community.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, what is the work that you're doing there that could translate to build these bridges across communities? Because, like I said, this long, slow history of disaster is everywhere. The other thing is, as Vincent had just mentioned, we need skilled workers down here, but long term skilled workers, not short term. And that's a little bit more to offer. And we can also use money. Mm-hmm. You know, Common Ground could use money. I mean, like, this is not a pitch for money, but I'm just telling you, it helps make it roll. And some of the programs we're working on are to do worker-run businesses here and job training programs here. But we need seed money to get those going to make them self-sufficient. Because these aren't going to be just jobs where people won't have dignity. These are jobs with dignity and respect where people can actually make a living wage. And in New Orleans, a lot of people don't even make anything close to a living wage. They get paid substandard fees because they can. You know, a lot of them have service work, but we want to teach people to have skills. So people to come down, carpenters, electricians, plumbers, to help rebuild New Orleans in a new way, in the way that the people want it to be built, not the way the government only wants it to be built. And we can do it. All of us can do it.
Okay, man. Well, I thank you for taking some time to talk to us today.
Yes. Yeah, thank you very much for calling.
Thanks.
All right.
Thanks.
And thank you for having. Thanks for keeping it in the news. All right. We appreciate it.
Definitely.
All right. Keep the faith.
All right now.
Take a short break. We're going to play cut number two on that other one. Yeah.
Wasn't that cool when he faded away? Like, shh.
And we'll be back.
I thought it was the government.
Shortly.
I did. I was like, whoa.
Here at Ebony Spectrum. I think we got cut number four in there.
A beignet. Yeah. A beignet down on Bourbon Street.
All right. We'll be right back.